Okay. It is 3:31 p.m. Hello, everyone. I am chairperson of the Commission on Disability Issues. My name is Zach Kobel. I'm calling this meeting to order. Stephanie or Brandy, whichever one is going to do it, can you take roll call?
Yep, absolutely. Sue Krager. Derek Espadas.
Present.
Zach Kobel.
Here.
Ray Jordan.
Here.
Lily Bogan.
Did you call my name?
Sorry.
Yes.
It's Sue Krager here. Sorry, I just got on. I couldn't get on Teams, so I'm on the phone.
Okay.
Okay, great. Thanks, Sue.
Wesley Derbyshire?
Present. I'm here.
Kate Elliott? I see her.
Okay.
Jonathan Lee Confer.
Here.
Okay. We have quorum, so this is the meeting for the CODI of May 21st.
Thank you, Stephanie, and thanks everyone for joining us. We will go right into our first item on the agenda, a call to the public. If there are members of the public on the meeting, now would be a time for you all to raise concerns that you might have with what's going on for disabled people in our community, or just want to share. We may not speak to that during the meeting, but we take public comment very seriously, and they often end up as agenda items or covered elsewhere. So thanks. I'll pause for just a moment. Not seeing anyone directly raise their virtual hand, unmute themselves. I will just go ahead and assume that there are no members of the public that want to raise a comment right now. And we will move on to the next agenda item on our docket today, which is consideration and possible approval of draft meeting minutes from April 2025 meeting. Do people have comments, questions, changes, you know, if they've had an opportunity to review the minutes?
Commissioner Bogan moves to accept the meeting minutes.
Okay. Thank you, Lily. If there is a second, we would take a second.
I can second that. It's Wesley.
Any other discussion? I saw what I thought was a person about to either unmute themselves or speak. So I just wanted to make sure I didn't miss anything.
Commissioner Krager.
Hi, Sue.
I just wanted to say, since I was a little picky about the meetings the minutes last week, I wanted to just say how well written I thought these were. They were very nice.
Great. Thank you, Sue. So after hearing that and having a second, there's a motion on the floor. Stephanie, can you take roll call, please?
Absolutely. Sue Krager?
Yes.
Derek Espadas?
Yes.
Zach Kobel?
Yes.
Ray Jordan? Did he step out? I'll come back around. Lily Bogan?
Yes.
Wesley Derbyshire?
Yes.
Kate Elliott?
Yes.
Jonathan Lee Confer?
Yes.
Ray Jordan?
I'm not sure where Ray went to. Maybe there was someone at the door. I'm not seeing anything over email, or I didn't receive any text. Could we just consider him, like, absent for the vote or not voting?
Yeah, we can pass the motion 7-0 or 7-1?
Yeah.
Okay, motion passes.
Okay. Hopefully Ray's okay. We'll just, keep an eye out for any alerts. Okay, next item on the agenda is consideration and possible approval of a memorandum regarding Sunvan and update on work regarding Sunvan. I can kind of give the update and the work. So Wesley, Ray, and I worked on the memorandum and kind of the concepts within the memorandum. The memo would go to mayor and council as part of our advisement, duties, to mayor and council. You'll have heard from, representatives of SunTran and SunVan, about the comprehensive operational analysis and, what's in there, kind of what's been going on. We as a commission, going back further than I've been on the commission, have long dealt with SunTran and SunVan. We've really, dealt with them quite a bit over the last couple of years. And, I feel like we've been pretty encouraging of an understanding given the pandemic that there's operational constraints, that on-time percentages weren't what they have been. But, as we've moved out of the heavy pandemic time, it doesn't seem like, the company, operating Sunvan has been able to keep driver levels at a level needed to create better on-time percentages concurrent with their goal. They didn't really approach, talk about how they approach hiring, how they ensure hiring is at the proper level. In the COA, they talk about cutting hours of service to the ADA optional area, to better, meet on-time percentages, but, there is no indication that those services will come back to people living in that area. And while I'm generally supportive of a 24/7 on-demand component that people could pay for, what they propose is at base a ton more expensive than other municipalities providing a similar service. I think we just wrote it in terms of part of a negotiation is contract negotiations with the city is looking for the best service provider. And that's what we're proposing the city do. So that covers the memo. I was going to talk about how I was unable to complete a draft of an op-ed, but I don't know if you all received an email just a little while ago, but it does not look like we are able to do an op-ed as an official position of CODI. Individual members in their personal capacity can write op-eds and mention that they are members of CODI, but it cannot be the official position. So we're just going to leave it at that. So, or I'm going to leave it at that. You all can discuss. I'm going to shut up now. And, you know, if people have comments or questions or issues, now would be a good time. So. Sue, I see, you know, your phone making noise. Did you have a comment or a question?
No, I should, I'll try to mute it. I'm not quite sure. I don't know why. It says my computer software isn't supported by Teams. So I haven't had that trouble before, but I did today. I'll mute my phone, and then hopefully I can still hear you.
Okay. Ray, I see that you raised your virtual hand.
Thank you. Is this thing on? I'm sorry. I had to kind of duck out of the meeting for a few minutes there. I get a lot of stuff going on in the background. I have had occasion to email some people at Sunbam numerous times about all kinds of stuff related to the comprehensive operational analysis, which I did comment to them I thought was not particularly comprehensive. And there is no mention in any of that comprehensive operational analysis documentation about the fact that they might have even looked at whether RATP Dev is the appropriate organization to be running. So that one, it's not a separate issue to the operational analysis, but as I've been thinking through it and talking with a couple of people, I think it is an important one for us to consider. I think that's all I got.
Okay. Wesley, I see your hand up, and you're
yes,
next on the dot.
Zach, all I want to say is thank you for clarifying the op-ed stuff after a few months of getting to the bottom of that. I appreciate that. So now we know which way we can go on that. Thank you very much for taking care of that.
Yeah, no problem. I don't see any other people's hands up, or, you know, but if you have comments or questions, you know, otherwise, like, I would be kind of looking for a motion or, you know, to either approve the, approve the memo or deny the memo or, you know.
I'm going to make the motion to approve the memo as written.
Thank you, Wesley. So, Ray, I see your hand up. Is that a second or, like an addition?
It's a second, but, in the background, I had, I'd read the memo, which I think is great. But I had made a few minor changes, just shuffled some words around and, replaced a couple of words with different ones. But it's basically the same memo, and I would second with the, those little adjustments.
And I believe that I have seen the adjustments, and I agree that they're, you know, they're minor and they don't go to changing the contents or the tone or, you know, or the proposals in the memo. So I would be fine with editing the motion to accept the memo as, like with a raise minor changes. And then we can send it to mayor and council. So I don't know if that's like two different motions and then one, we actually probably need another second on one of them to
do I amend my motion?
Sure, you can amend your motion.
So I'll amend my motion to accept the memo as written with the minor edits that Ray has recommended.
Okay. Then Ray, will you second?
I will second.
Okay. Do other people have discussion, questions, thoughts on the memo or the contents therein, recognizing, you know, that it's a pretty strong statement in the memo. So, okay, I'm not seeing anyone. So, Stephanie, will you go ahead and take roll call on this?
Yes. Sue Krieger?
Yes.
Derek Espada?
Yes.
Zach Coble?
Yes.
Ray Jordan?
Yes.
Lily Bogan?
Yes.
Wesley Derbyshire?
Yes.
Kate Elliott?
Yes.
Jonathan Lee Confer?
Yes.
Motion passes 8-0.
Okay, great. Ray, will you email, I guess, Stephanie and Brandy with your changes and CC me so then they can ship it off to Mayor and Council?
With edits, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Great.
Question. Would... I've still got it. The version I did is still like got the track changes thing. Do you want me to just kind of accept all the changes? And
yeah, just accept all the changes and kind of make it clean. So
got it. Done. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you. All right. Okay. So now I don't know who will be discussing this, but I received a request for an agenda item on an update on inclusive playground at Palo Verde Park with Parks and Recreation. So if there is a representative here to speak to that, to get the update, you know, now would be a good time. Jennifer, I'm not sure who.
Or Jasmine.
Or Jasmine. Sorry. Yeah,
we're
sorry, Jasmine.
Adding another J to the mix. Hi, everyone. I'm Jasmine Chan. I'm the Capital Planning Administrator for Parks and Recreation. So we are doing a playground replacement over at Palo Verde Park. This is funded through Proposition 407, the voter-approved Parks and Connections Bond. From the request of Ward 2, we are looking at making this replacement a more inclusive play space. It will not, unfortunately, for those familiar with the play area, it will not be expanding the existing footprint, so it won't look like kind of an inclusive playground if you've been to one before, where those are really quite large and have a very wide diversity of different play elements there. But this one will include a play structure and then more ground-level play equipment there. So I'm going to share my screen. I think the easiest way to talk about this is to just go through the survey itself. Can you see my screen?
Yes.
Is that showing up? Okay. So I am currently on the Palo Verde Park website. That's located at the TucsonEZ.gov website. You can see there's a picture actually on the main page of the existing playground. That has kind of reached its useful life at this point. So we are looking at doing that replacement. So we are working with a playground manufacturer called Miracle. They're a national playground manufacturing company. They also have teams that are devoted to understanding play in its different ways and different methods that people
like to engage in that. So here's the survey. Again, that's linked directly from the park website. Gives you an overview of where the playground is located. This is a privacy statement. It's about collecting demographic data. All of those, just letting you know, all of those are optional. So you could say, yes, I agree, but then not fill out anything, but still give us your opinion of what you'd like to see at the park. So we have a main play structure. It will be significantly smaller than what's there existing. But that it'll have a couple of slides, different climbing elements, as well as on this side, which you can't see in this rendering, it has steps there, as well as a 3-foot deck and a 4-foot deck on that side. And then the structure itself is the same among the three options. The difference is this central area, and that's where the poured in place rubber surfacing is located at this playground. The rest, is the engineered with pry bar, fall surfacing. So on the poured in place, there are different play elements that have been proposed by Miracle, the playground manufacturer. And the survey just walks through what each of those elements are for each of the options. So the first option has got a 10 spin. This is raised above the ground, can accommodate kids in various placements, right? Sitting on it, kneeling on it, standing on it. And then the first option also has this MM Dynamics Lab. That's Miracle Museum Dynamics Lab. So it's kind of different elements that are attached to the ground that you can approach from different heights, to get to play kind of from either a picture or a visual or an auditory, experience. And then this is Grand Gallery, kind of more of that with different offsets of those panels. And then this final one would be their garden wall. It's described as a colorful, freestanding, child-height sensory wall with some play opportunities designed to help kids cultivate multi-sensory play experiences. Option 2 also features that 10 spin, so the same kind of raised from the ground spinner, but with different panel elements. And the kind of main feature here is what Miracle calls their Odyssey Hall. To us, we kind of call this the car wash. It's kind of a taller vertical structure, but the purpose of it is to kind of go among the different textures that come down to the ground. So you've got sort of like a hard rubbery surface. That's these black strips here, and then a different turnable beads, I guess, is the way to describe that. And then again, also has the same sensory garden wall. Option 3 has the inclusive whirl in mini city. So inclusive whirl is the flush to the ground spinner. So you would be able to wheel onto that directly, as opposed to the 10 spin, which is the raised spinner. And then this one has, you interact with this machine, I think you crank this red lever here and it rolls up it's a treat for the cat. And then you kind of see how it comes down in through the panel here, and then has more kind of imaginative play elements here. So mini city chattery and then a mini city truck. And it has various sensory panels on there. So we're mainly asking for what option you prefer, and any comments are also welcome. I took a look at survey results. We've had 70 participants as of today. The survey does close on Saturday, the 25th, with comments such as, this really should be larger, or why are there only kind of play elements targeted for age 5 and younger? Now, also in partnership with Ward 2, we are looking at Udall Park. We have also significant funding from Proposition 407 And we are looking to do a full-scale inclusive playground over there. So we're looking at Palo Verde Park as kind of the introduction to that, see what's kind of working for the community and use that to then say, okay, give us feedback about what's happening here and help us with Udall Park and making that kind of the destination play for inclusive playgrounds. I think Jen had sent the link to the website into the chat, so that is there for you all. Are there other questions or any questions, really, that I can answer about this project?
Thank you, Jasmine. I know I have a couple questions, but I would open it up to the rest of the commission if you all have questions first.
Sure. I can ask a question. Or did somebody raise their hand before me? I didn't raise a hand, actually, so go ahead.
It's fine. It's fine, Jonathan. There's plenty of time, so Ray, you're next. I'm just having to scroll over to see whose hand is raised. So sorry for the delay. But go ahead, Jonathan.
All right. Thanks, Jasmine, for that presentation. This probably isn't like a question directly for you, but I was looking at the fiber, like the FIBAR wood chip, engineered wood chip fiber installation process. And there are three different types, and they don't seem to meet CPSC requirements for the depth. Can I get confirmation on that from whoever is in charge of that? Because it's supposed to be at least 9 inches minimum of loose fill. And it seems like some of them might not be. And that's to the, I think it was the ASTM 1292 standard, I think. So maybe you can help double check with that because they might know more than what they're listing on just their installation product designs.
Okay, got it. So you're saying from this description up here?
Yeah, it was fiber. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we will absolutely be looking into that. And several of our project managers are CPSI certified. So they do kind of a first from a, we don't use like their reports to say this playground is okay. Right?
Totally.
We do use that knowledge for a like design construction perspective to make sure that we're okay. So, yeah, I'll check with them. The project manager for this has CPSI. So I'll definitely verify that component.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Ray, I think you're next.
Well, thanks. Nice presentation. I like the bright colors playground equipment isn't something I know very much about, but I get a couple of questions and it's mostly about the survey. At the very bottom of the survey, it's asked the question, which kind of play equipment would you prefer to play on? Now, if you're asking me, an adult, there are a couple of things there and who uses a wheelchair. I get a couple of ideas, but it's not about me. It's about the kids. So the first of all is, do you think kids will be filling out this survey or will parents be doing this on their behalf? And the second question is, there are three options. And is there any data that you have that suggests which of all of those different playground elements, which are most popular and which get used the most by which age groups?
Hold on, let me write this down first. Okay, so your first question is, are there kids filling this out or parents primarily filling this out? It is parents primarily filling these out. Kind of that's same as for most of our surveys. We are working at improving our kid input on park spaces. So that's kind of, that's a work in progress. One of our project managers was able to work with a different community school to do some outreach for a playground over at Silver Lake Park. So using that to build on the things that she's learned and putting that into play with other surveys that we have. The second question, so you're asking if we have data that suggests which play elements are most popular and for which age group, is that correct?
Yeah, because, and the reason I ask that is just because it would not be great if you selected one of those options and then the kids avoided one or two of the elements and played a lot on the other ones. And then somebody would be going, oh, gee, I wish I'd made a different choice.
Yeah, I can definitely ask the playground manufacturer what data they have. For that, I'm sure they have that kind of age group plus what type of play people are looking at. That so I can ask that question and get back to you with that information.
Thank you.
Cool. Any other like questions from the commissioners thus far? Want to check in because I have a couple, but one.
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up on the last question.
Sure, because
as you were going through the presentation, I'm trying to put on my kid's hat and my memories of childhood and what I did and did not play with in parks. And I'm also very curious on the data because option one, aside from accessibility concerns, I literally was thinking that I would not touch any of that. Like I would be disappointed as a child. Yeah. But then again, I'm 50 years old and I don't know if a child, they might show up and be like, oh, this is the greatest thing in the world. So I think, yeah, coming up with the data on what the interest and the different age ranges on that is very important just so that it's not just a new project that ends up sitting there because of lack of interest or being utilized in an inappropriate manner. Because also thinking back to my childhood, if it was boring and uninteresting, we destroyed it.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. And disabled kids can, speaking from experience, we can still destroy things. We're very capable of that. Or I was when I was a kid. Thanks, Derek. I think my question has to do, my couple questions that have to do is like, why were the, like, so personally, I like option, like the spinner on option number three better than the spinner on option two or one, because like, wheelchair using individuals or other mobility, device using individuals could wheel themselves up and wouldn't need assistance to get on, onto that. And they could still be spun with, non-disabled kids as well. But I'm curious why the elements were combined together that were. Like, so, yeah.
That's a great question. So we rely heavily on the playground manufacturer to do this because what we do is we say, here's the budget we have for this playground. And you say here's kind of if there's like a theme or if there's a particular focus, then we let
them
know what that is. And then they say, okay, here are options that will fit with your budget and fit within this play area and shape that you have. So like kind of meeting all of those safety standards. So the information that we provided to Miracle was that we wanted the play elements and with not just more, we want an inclusive focus for this playground, and we have a budget. I think this one is around $200,000 to work with. So that's kind of meant for a structure and also different sensory panels. It's what that central area is called, the broader category. So these are the options that they provided to us. I did ask them if it's possible to present this information in a forum, like here are different elements and which ones are your favorites from that.
the advice that I had received was that it is difficult to make sure that we can our budgetary and also space constraints if we go that route. So his recommendation was to provide several options of your own work with our constraints and solicit that feedback.
Thank you. So, I mean, I guess that makes sense, you know, to kind of combine what's possible with within the cost, you know, cost constraints. And then was there any thought to how, like, disabled parents might interact with these play elements as well. I don't know if the company has any data on that, like, you know, how, ensuring their, you know, children are able to play on these elements and interact. And I think for me personally, option three seems the most, I don't know if it's the most fun, but it's like the most accessible. I mean, it could be the most fun. I just, you know, without having tried it out. So I mean, just from a, that's just my personal opinion. So,
is there an option for us to try it out? Cause I've been on that.
Yeah. Can we take a field trip?
I don't know where they have any inclusive world installed. I know we don't have one in the Tucson Parks and Rec system. They might have one in the Tucson metro region. I can definitely ask that question. I can also ask about what information they have about parents and caregivers will also interact with the play elements proposed in each of these options. And know that for the UNOL playground, the intent for how that that outreach will go will be very different from what you're seeing here. The UNOL park plan for outreach is much more on the have a discussion about what people would like to see in this playground, as opposed to what here are already kind of set up options for people to select from. So keeping in mind both the kids' experience on the play space and also the parents and caregivers' experience on them.
Cool. Thank you, Jasmine. Do any other members have feedback or questions? I just want to respect your time, and then we have like an agenda item to get to. Okay. I'm not seeing anyone. Thank you for sharing this, Jasmine. I'll definitely, you know, share the survey and, you know, what's been going on with parents. I know who, you know, might have a better idea of what their kids might like more than I do.
That was great. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. So hi, Jennifer, do you prefer Jen or Jennifer? I'm slightly getting confused.
I answer to both, and I'll say that most of my adult life has been Jen. Jennifer, I often get from my parents when okay. Jennifer Ellis.
I'll do Jen then.
All right, and then if you just start calling me Jennifer Ellis, I will know I'm in trouble. So,
no trouble here. So we invited you back on because, you know, we had that a couple of months ago. We had, you know, you taking us through a 20-minute spin of of quite a lot of data. And we didn't have the attachment like until the meeting was happening. So I wanted to kind of invite you back on and go through that. I mean, you've done the PowerPoint and that was re-sent back up. I know I have questions about, you know, how this data will be used, what the goal of it is, but, you know, I'd like to open it up to the other committee members to, you know, if they have questions regarding kind of, I don't know what to call it, the ADA progress data on accessibility, maybe of different departments in the city.
If it's helpful to say, that's an annual report and, this year, it kind of fell into my excited hands to work on. And, so the information is really about 2024 and we're doing these every year. My hope is that, through this calendar year, we're going to develop a few more procedures that will make it a little bit more accurate, a little easier to pull the information together and also kind of maybe instill more coordination across our department. Mm-hmm. So we're talking a bit more and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Who's got questions?
Yes, Ray.
I'll start. Who's surprised about that? Nobody. I see. I looked at the PowerPoint presentation there. It's great. It's a big zoomed out view of the process, which is really nice. Gives us an overview, I guess, a big view of what's going on. What's the progress in making the individual projects the aims? I suppose there are ADA fails that have been recognized and documented and then a plan to correct those at some point. How's the process going with being able to make all of that accessible to us, the public, so we can say, oh yeah, this looks like it's one of the next projects ready to go because, you know, I'm out there on the streets and I'm, you know, falling over sideways trying to get up a sidewalk or some such thing. And I'm thinking, oh, I've reported this through, 311 or whatever. So it's got to be on the list somewhere. Can I look that up and say, oh, that's okay. That's not budgeted until next year, but at least I know something's happening. Is that sort of thing underway?
That is something that we need to do better at and we need to work on. And that is a goal this year. I'll share a few different layers to this. One is what you've just mentioned, contemporary reports on issues that exist out there. I'll share what I'm most familiar with, which is really from the transportation and mobility realm. We have a system. You can call the number 311, like you just said, and make a complaint or share information. And then that gets distributed out to appropriate departments. When transportation receives it, it goes into our work order system, if you will. And then that creates a data point that we're able to search on. We are able to put that into a work order, and that then falls into a prioritization effort by the group that receives the work order slash complaint. For you to be able to go in to see that, I don't believe we have that interface I appreciate you asking that question because that gives me an understanding of a way that you would like to see information like that. And that is something that I can add into our conversations as we're moving forward on. I'll be honest with you. I hate to say this, but we do have the interface internally that we can get on and look at. And not everyone in the department is aware of how to use the system, nor do they get in there with any regularity. But the people who do use it, understand it. Another layer of information that we have, which is kind of the self-inventory and ADA transition plan just for right-of-way infrastructure, that data is so large and comprehensive. We have it internally. We do not have that in an interface that can be looked at or even spatially like mapped for public view. It was created and then put on its own server because it's so large. It was done with LiDAR imaging, and then we transitioned it into different GIS shape files. So I say all of that in the spirit of just sharing. There is information there. It was created a number of years ago. And what we haven't done a great job on is recognizing that we have that data and updating it. There's a process that I'd really like for us to go through, which is trying, if we can, internally to figure out what projects have we done since 2017 or 2015, really, when the data was created until now, to and analyze what we believe has been corrected. But then to your point, when there are calls and complaints that come in, being able to understand, is that something that's already been recorded in that data collected from 2015? Is it new? And, in that space of time that we built new things, hopefully we're building it correctly. That's the goal. We have standard details and we have inspectors that go to help us ensure that. But, if there's new things that were not documented or it's new construction, I mean, those are all things that are extremely important for us to know and to work on fixing. I feel like I've been talking a lot, but those couple of data sources, we honestly really need to work on how to operationalize that. We stood it up. It was an incredible effort. We haven't figured out how to really use it to our benefit. And now we've lost some time in keeping it current.
Mm. So if I can just continue just for a moment. So sure. from the member of the public's point of view, a complaint sometimes just disappears into the abyss, never to be heard from again. Now, perhaps it's made its way onto the database somehow or other, but the member of the public may not know. There's been some stuff I've reported that still exists several years later, some problem out there in the streets. And I'm talking mainly about sidewalks at this stage, but I'm sure there are other kinds of issues as well. And then there's one or two that I've reported. Actually, I've seen them be fixed. Now, was that a result of my report, or was it somebody else got in even before me and reported exactly the same thing? I will never know, I guess.
May I ask if you leave an email address or if you share an email address with that? Let me look into that, because it's my understanding and what I have witnessed is as they enter, when our customer service representatives or CSRs get those calls, they'll input the information or, connect in an email into the system, and whomever is involved in the conversation. So whomever is on the email address, if it's the person submitting it and they've copied anybody, all of those folks are entered into that one record that's added into the system. And then if there's additional folks that call in about the same, all of those folks get grouped together within the system. And so any progress report on that then goes out to all of those folks. So if you're not getting communication, let me look into that, because that is not how our system is supposed to work.
Finally, I'll finish in just a second. I do my reports online. I've registered an account or whatever you call it on 311. So all my details are logged every time I report something, and I include photographs. So, and I always get an acknowledgement that my report has been received. And often that is the end.
Okay. So maybe it's in that transition from 311 to our work order system. That's, I'll look into that. That does seem like that's a possibility. And I think there's ways to fix that. So
thank you.
You're welcome. Mr. Derbyshire.
Yeah, so actually I'm following up on the same idea. I'm just curious, is there a way to look up online by work order number to see what the progress of a particular work order is, for the public when I put in a request?
In our system, which is called Cartograph OMS, it's really internally focused. We don't have a public interface. But let me look into that a little bit further to understand. I will admit that I'm not as versed in the 311 system, and I'd like to know more about that. So let me check in on that. But for our Department of Transportation and Mobility side, the work order interface is not public facing. So there's no way to search on that. But I love that idea. I feel like it would be so nice.
Well,
for
right.
You to
I mean,
be able
that's an example. I mean, I'll just give you my example is that I put in a sidewalk repair request because it was, very high risk of trip hazard. I did that about a year and a half or so ago. And then I got a reply about a half year or a year later saying that it was completed, when in fact it wasn't completed. And instead, it was just marked out. And then I never really gave it much of a thought at that particular moment. And now, a half year, a year later, I'm thinking, well, it's really not complete. Yet that email said, complete it. And then I remembered in one of our other meetings that they noted, well, when their teams come out and do their work, they do it in regions. And I know that there's one area over by the bus terminal near Broadway and Houghton where there was another item that I cited. That's been corrected. I'm like thinking, well, they fixed that one, but they didn't fix the one on my road.
They didn't fix the other.
Yeah, okay. So I was just like, okay, so that one's still sitting out there. And it'd be nice to actually go back and look to see what the record really says, that kind of stuff. That's why I'm bringing it up, right?
Okay.
Right? And I've got to go back and find my email to find out what my work order number is, et cetera, et cetera. So anyway, that's all I'm after. Okay. So thank you.
I value that. Thank you.
Okay.
Do other members of the commission have questions, comments, thoughts? I know I do, but I didn't take space before people had comments. So not seeing anyone specifically, I guess I had a few different questions. One is I looked through pretty detailed, half of the submission to the Arizona Department of Transportation, and then skimmed the last several pages where it was just notes about general service, the GSA getting to whatever work order. It seemed like Parks, DTM, and I don't know if there was other departments
involved.
But
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The three departments typically are general services, parks, and transportation. Right. And then also IT is a newer one because there's a change requiring compliance by April of 2026. So while they are doing normally work in trying to ensure that our websites are accessible, a new court ruling has required that extend also to mobile apps.
Oh, okay. I'm not against that, but I guess my question was, I think you identified last time we spoke with you that, like, the different departments were using kind of different databases or different ways of documentation, and it seemed like the process was in order to make, to have the different departments utilize the same system or a similar system that's, like, more integrated, so the data was,
is a dream. That is a dream I have. I feel like it is not beyond possible. However, you know, there is a bit of discussion and kind of exploration that needs to happen to understand how we can do that. Currently, we don't have a shared system that everyone is using that would be able to create reporting like that. But I'm an optimist, dadgummit, and I feel like somewhere in there we will find something. I think the conversation just really needs to happen for us to figure that out. There is a larger project management tool that rolled out within the organization that we might have some ability to add some fields in and capture some information. What that costs to do, I don't know. So I certainly don't want to raise any expectations that we can do something if it costs us, an exorbitant amount of money that's not planned. But I think the conversation will help us understand what different ways we might get better at coordinating and accessing, tracking that information, identifying it, and then tracking it.
Mm-hmm. I'm also wondering if, I realize that this is probably, I don't know if it's the first time you collated all this data and, like, saw kind of how it was formatted differently. One of the things I noticed is that, on some of the fields or, some of the work notations, there was a lot of detail about the specific, ADA improvements or what have you in them. And then on others, there was as part of Bike Boulevard, signals were Bike Boulevard improvements, and assuming that meant signals and stuff that could be ADA accessible, but I don't know that.
Agreed.
So is there a thought of standardizing, but kind of setting rules or expectations about the level of detail,
Absolutely.
ADA improvement would.
Yeah. Yes, and I to your point, absolutely, and I agree with you. I feel, having put this together, I will share that, it was hard. I needed to do it quickly, and I didn't have all the level of detail that I needed in an easy place to access and reference. But I did learn a lot in pulling it together about how we are keeping data. Even that was progress. I wish we were light years ahead, but just full self-awareness and self-disclosure, we can be doing better, and that's what we'll be working on. Mm-hmm. And I like your idea of categorizing it. I feel like there's a number of different things that we can point out as having impact to the, you know, better access to the right of way. What are those different things? And then I would love in a perfect world that we know for every single project where, you know, those are going in, how many of them, and we can actually track that. Knowing where there's deficits in our right of way, where we don't have ADA compliant ADA ramps, or, you know, where we can add signals for better crossings. Those are things that fixing the things that are not, you know, correct, that we don't want them to remain. It'd be really wonderful to be able to start chipping away at those and see that progress. And we know about some other cities that have set up dashboards, and in my mind's eye, it would be really helpful to see something like that established as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think in general, that would like help people with disabilities, but like help, you know, just the general public notice, like, especially if there's ever a proposition or other funding source that is, you know, more directly related to accessibility. Like, I know 411 and 407, you know, have accessibility elements, but I'm like, you know, if a dream of mine would occur and like there's just a funding source related to accessibility, it would be fun to see the progress of that in general. A couple other questions.
Would it be okay if I just jump in here real quick?
Oh, yes.
Chris?
Hi. Thank you. Yeah, hi. Sorry, this is Chris from War 2. Jen, I just have a real quick question. Are we keeping track of all the ADA work and ADA ramps and all that kind of stuff that are are taking place on all the Project 411 work? Because go ahead.
We are. I would share that it would be we are, but not in the most easily accessible or calculable way. So we have at the design level from the beginning of the program, we've had notations on the designs, kind of tracking the number of curb ramps going in, for instance. And then at the point in time that they actually do construction, things can change in the field. And so where they maybe planned to put in a curb ramp, they actually get out there. There's already one there, and they decide to put it at a different location. Those changes in the field are captured in what we call as-builts. And our as-builts now, we have a backlog, but we're working to update those so that they show us where the ADA ramps are being installed. On the asphalt, the 411 projects, that's really about pavement. We're mainly doing curb ramps and the asphalt treatment. So those as-builts will really focus in on just that. What I would love to see is that, which is on, you know, like digital plan sheets, that we're also getting that into a mapping-based system so that we can identify and know where those new curb ramps have got in. And because 411 is also repairing, if they come across something that's, you know, not designed to the accurate standards, they will pull some out and replace them. And so we would love to have record of that. That gets at our ADA transition plan efforts. So we'd like to really track where we're fixing what we know is not accurate.
Yeah, because there's over 530 ADA ramps that are going into Rolling Hills just alone. let alone right. everything else that's happened in Tierra del Sol, yeah. Vista del Rio, and all that fun stuff. And it just seems that now would be the perfect time to actually keep a lock of that stuff. But thank you very much. I appreciate you taking the question. I'm sorry to interrupt, and I shall disappear.
Don't disappear. Stay.
Yeah, you can stay, Chris. I'm just also wondering if, you know, with the IT department's, like, push to create more web accessibility within the, you know, websites themselves and the mobile apps, is there, like, a push to also standardize accessibility for documents that the city produces? Because those can be digitally, you know, sent out as well via PDFs or Word docs or what have, you know, any other type of digital format.
Mm-hmm. I understand. That's a great question. And I have to admit, I need to touch base with IT and the person they brought on to help run that effort to be able to answer that. And I actually think it would be really cool, maybe at a future meeting, to have them come and talk about what they're doing. This could be a great group to...
Yeah, I know they came, I don't know, a year or so ago and were working on stuff, but I think that might have been even before the DOJ policy.
That could be. Okay.
And then final question for me, at least, two-parter. Are you tasked with working on the 2025 representation of this type of report to ADOT? And if so, when it's available, you know, publicly available, could we get another, can this just be a regular occurrence where we'd get a copy?
Absolutely. I like that idea so much. I think even trying to think about some standard times to come and connect in so that's kind of anticipated would be great.
Yeah, that would be excellent, because then, you know, we would have, this is DTM reporting time. Ray, did you have another comment, question?
Thank you, Zach. I have one final question, Jen. I would love anyway, if the commission here could see, the plan for one of, a sidewalk upgrade, you know, with curb ramps, et cetera. And I'm wondering whether it would be possible to pick a fairly simple one and have somebody with the, whether it's yourself or somebody else with the technical stuff saying, okay, here's what we're planning, and here's why we're doing it this way and this way. And, you know, run us through maybe a couple of the ADA aspects of it, and then maybe say, and this little project is going to cost the city X number of bucks. Just sort of gives, I think, a whole overall context of the immensity of what you are undertaking. And, you know, I know it's probably going to take 100 years to get it all finished because there is so much work that needs to be done out there in the city. But it might be great to see how that all sort of comes together, at least in a small example.
I think that's absolutely doable, and I am already thinking of the team members that would be great to bring to that discussion. So let me connect with them and see if we can pull that together. Does Cody take the summer off, or are you guys planning to meet every month?
At this point, we have not taken the summer off. So we have, I think the only time we were unable to meet was last June, and that was because our meeting fell on Juneteenth, and there was no alternate scheduled day that worked. So I'd have to look at if that's going, you know, if our meeting day would fall any holidays, but I don't think we're taking any time off unless members want to take time off. But yeah.
What I could do is let me check with those folks. I think there's some very real examples that are very current. I think the cost discussion is something that is just mind-blowing, so helpful to help share information. And it does get at, you know, part of the challenge of correcting all the stuff is just – even in our move to Tucson, a large long-range transportation plan that was accepted by Mayor and Council in 2021, the analysis at that point in time was, you know, basically $1.4 billion just to correct the deficient infrastructure that's out there. What we're excited by, and which is why I would love to really glom on to Chris's point, glom on to the data, is we have these funding packages. We are making tremendous, infrastructure construction across the city. Capturing that, I think, could help us see, you know, how we're making a dent in that $1.4 billion. And that was 2021 dollars. That's not even what today's is. So I would. That's where my excitement gets at, because I feel like that really helps us see, you know, on the thermometer of, you know, getting close to achieving our goal. Where are we? So we are aiming to be able to show all of that. I think to give you that sort of insight into design decisions and sort of our process. Love to do that. We have some very smart folks working in that area on our team and within the city. I think from just the transportation area, happy to bring that in, and, you know, maybe there's other conversations down the line that can help.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And I think, I would value that discussion as well, because, you know, I know that, like, there's, like, in a perfect world, all of this could be done, like, with what we have, but I know the hard choices have to be made, priorities have to be done, and figuring out how that, and bringing transparency to how that is happening, you know, can help breed public trust, I think, in, you know, what's been going on in the city. So, do other, you know, I just want to put it out. Do other members have any last questions for Jen before we let her go? Okay, I'm not seeing anyone. Jen, thanks. Thanks so much for joining us. I really appreciate your time.
Glad to, and look forward to the next time.
Cool. Feel free to email me anytime. I think we have each other's contact information. So,
yes.
Okay. Thank you. Next on the agenda is our final agenda item, which would be announcements. If any CODI members have announcements that have to do with CODI business or, you know, events that might be of interest to the disability community, now would be an excellent time to, you know, raise your hand, come off mute. And I see Wesley first. And yeah, Wesley, go ahead.
Yeah, so in the past, we oftentimes talked about when we met with our committee members, and I did meet with Paul Cunningham and Chris this past month. And I just say, I want to say that meeting went very well, and you know, Paul had some ideas to share, and I'll get with you on that, Zach. And I shared some ideas with him from me and from us. So that, you know, was a fruitful meeting, and I enjoyed, talking with both of them. And that's all I've got.
Thank you, Wesley. Appreciate it so much. Derek, I think you had your hand up next, and then Ray.
from what I can tell.
So just as I'm talking to people in the public in general, there's still a concern with the streetcar tracks and the difficulty they provide to people in wheelchairs. And on Friday, myself, my wheel, and I'm crossing on the crosswalk, got stuck in the tracks on my wheelchair with the streetcar coming down the street. And it was a lot further down than needed. It was just very disconcerting just to see the streetcar coming. Fortunately, there was someone there that helped me pop out the wheel. But now I need a wheel on my wheelchair. But the SunTram tracks continue to be an issue for those in wheelchairs, and people in the public that I've been speaking to are having that issue as well. One of the things in Phoenix that I noted that they do on their tracks is there's a little asphalt lip on the crosswalks, and I've never had a problem in Phoenix with their tracks. So I just wanted to bring that up because I've also not only my own experience, but running into people that are having tremendous issues, and it really alters their plans to be downtown. And just the excessive strategy that goes to be involved just to have the same experience as anyone else going downtown. It's a lot of effort to make it down there.
Thanks. Thanks for noting that, Derek. Jen, you may not know the answer to this question, but since you're still on the call, I thought I might ask, like, since I know, you know, Sun, like the actual operation of the streetcar is one thing, but like the tracks, like, are those controlled by DTM, like the maintenance of the actual tracks on the road? So like, I'm just trying to figure out who we would talk to as a commission.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, a couple of thoughts. I do think, even reporting it through 311, I really, value that, you're sharing this experience. I can't even imagine how scary that must have been. I would have been terrified. If you wanted to, Mr. Espadas, if you wanted to report that into 311, either through call or email, I will also follow up and let me understand how we would address this. I can provide a response back who does oversee that. My gut is it's a DTM, not a Sunlink, although let me understand that better and get you the right information.
Thank you. And Derek, I'll connect you and Jen in an email. So Ray, I think you're the last of the bunch.
Well, thank you. Two quick ones. I attended the Tucson Transit Advisory Committee meeting 2 weeks ago. That's on the first Monday of each month. It was my third meeting. Unfortunately, it didn't go ahead because of a lack of a quorum. However, since there were, this is an in-person meeting, but since there were people there, I kind of had discussions with some other committee members about looking at things from the point of view of people with disabilities, people with mobility devices, people with hearing and vision deficits and so forth. And kind of a couple of them sort of had a bit of an idea, but I was seeing the light bulb come on a couple of people as we were talking about various issues, including some ban and the COA there regarding that. So, yeah, disappointing that the meeting didn't go ahead, but still you score a few points anyway, whichever way you can. The second thing is I am very happy to report that after 9 months of not having an accessible pedestrian route inside Reed Park, from the outside of Reed Park to the zoo and the aquatic recreation center, when they back in July or August, when they closed the only accessible path, They now have one. As of last Friday, there is now one, count them one, the absolute minimum required by federal law, accessible pedestrian route from 22nd Street to the zoo and to the Aquatic Recreation Center. It's just too bad if you're coming from any other direction, because that Reed Park is open to the streets in four different directions. So in my view, we are one quarter of the way there to where we should be. Thank you.
Well, yeah, celebrate the small victories for sure. Great news, great progress. More to be done, more advocacy to be had, as we know. I think my announcement would be, as Commissioner Krager has indicated, she would like to step down as vice chair of CODI. I did not receive any volunteers to take her position. I can't force anyone to take her position, but I will be, making the email rounds, requesting of people that someone take their position, that position until I get a yes. Just to give you all a heads up that, prepared to be a little bit more annoyed at me. So
I do have someone interested, but they have a conflict of interest until after the city election.
Okay. To be a commissioner, Derek? Okay.
Yeah.
Great. I believe that we still have Ward 1 available, if I'm not mistaken, as a commissioner. I mean, and the city election could also open things up because we serve at the pleasure of our appointing offices and whatnot. So, but that's good to know, for future reference. Do any other commissioners have announcements that they'd like to share? Okay, I'm not seeing anyone, so I'm going to call this meeting adjourned. We're running a little early, but that's great. It's 4:53 p.m., so we can adjourn. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
A good one.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much, everybody.
Bye.
Hey, Zach, if you have a minute, I'll talk to you for real quick.
Oh, yeah, sure. If we can just, it's fine with me. I just didn't know if Brandy or Stephanie needed to.
Did you guys need to talk to Zach, you guys?
Yeah. What's up, Jonathan?
What does the vice chair position entail?
It could involve different things, but really it's just, like, if I'm not available, like, if I'm, ill, on vacation,